I stand before you a simple man, a man who has yet to experience the fruits of life.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
The fruits of life would be bananas, cherries,
whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Watch that. Welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. Pleasure to have you here on this fine day. Welcome to New England Broadcasting. We do a new show every weekday, usually. And it is my job, like a puppet on a stick, to entertain the hell out of you through satirical, witty comments, information with interesting guests, and animals. Well, the animal part, not really. I was walking through a mall yesterday. Really, Ron? Is that an accomplishment in your book? Yes, it is, to be honest with you. I don't like malls. Too much stuff going on. Although I love people watching. I love to watch people do their thing. Some of them just blindly go through life. Others are like very intense. I'm both. I just go through life and I'm very intense. I don't know. I'm a mixture. I'm a, a mixed breed of crap put together, and you get this. So I'm walking in the mall, and I'm doing window shopping. I bought about 5 windows. Oh, Ron, you're on the top of your humor game, obviously. So I bought like 5 windows. And so I'm walking in the mall, I'm doing window shopping, and I'm passing an Izod store. These are these stupid little polo shirts with the alligator on the breast pocket, on your left breast. Touch your left breast right now. Now make circles. All right, that's ridiculous. Although I'm sure some people are still doing that as I speak. Ron, all you had to do was suggest that I touch my breasts and make circles. That's all you had to do, suggest it, and I'm there. Okay, stop making circles now. You're making me dizzy and a little bit awkward. They have an alligator, a little logo of the alligator. That's the Izod logo. I-Z-O-D, Izod. I don't know what the hell it means. Is there a man named Joe Izod? Is there an Izod family? I don't know where that comes from. Who made that up? Let's see. Izod. Ooh, interesting. I think that's the name of the store. But the logo is an alligator. And I'm thinking as I'm walking by, ooh, not the best logo to have these days. As you know, recently, like a few weeks ago, kid was standing by the side of a man-made lagoon in Disney World there, one of the big resorts, and an alligator comes popping out of man-made waters, which is incredible, a real alligator in man-made waters, grabbed the kid, pulled the kid into the water, and everybody was frantic, and you couldn't do anything about it, and they were searching for the kid's body. They find the kid's body. He drowned. He wasn't eaten. He was drowned. And horrible, horrible thing, but now there's a lot of talk about alligators all over Florida. Everywhere you look, there's an alligator. You go into a convenience store in Miami, and there's an alligator playing Keno in the corner. Keno in the corner, ladies and gentlemen, from my latest album. apparently, one-third of the population of Miami, I'm sorry, of all of Florida, is alligators. For every three people, there's one alligator, which is nice that you've almost got your own alligator. But I'm thinking alligators are, that's a problem now, and yet you have this gigantic problem in Florida with these alligators all over the place, and yet there's a store whose main logo is an alligator, and it's like, hey, kids, keep your kids away from my polo shirt, because there's an alligator. And I thought, and I was walking by, and there's a big alligator on the sign. I'm thinking, timing is not good. Just like there's a chain of jewelry stores called Jared, J-A-R-E-D. Have you heard about this jewelry store chain, ladies and gentlemen? Don't answer. I can't hear you. It's a rhetorical question, which means I ask the question for absolutely no reason whatsoever, other than to hear myself think and talk, because if you respond, I would say, that's not really a question. I was just saying it. So what's the point? What's the point of a rhetorical question at all anyway? So, there you have it. So, Jared Jewelers are all over the United States and probably beyond, but I'm not too sure. Which is wonderful jewelry company, wonderful, buy jewelry for your lover. And then this happens with Jared, the guy from Subway, you know, who gets arrested for child pornography and making dates with little kids. And Jared is jailed. He is jailed. He is considered a criminal. And people in jail don't like child molesters. They don't. The people in jail are murderers. They're violent crime people, a lot of them. They're the toughest nails. But when they meet a guy in jail who's been jailed because he abuses children there, then these killers get very, very upset. That shakes them. I killed 500 people. But that guy who was fooling around with children, get him! And they can't tolerate this. So Jared is kind of being segregated from the prison population because they don't like child abusers and molesters and things like that. So that's Jared. And then I'm watching television right after that happened with the Jared Subway guy. And I see television commercials for Jared Jewelers, and I'm thinking, again, timing is not good. Not good for timing. Yeah, I'm going to buy jewelry for my lover that has the same name as the guy that's been jailed because he's been eating too many kids and too many subs, you know. Eat fresh, Jared. Oh, my God. That is not even funny. That is not even funny. Actually, it's not funny.
Whatever.
It's not funny at all.
Here's what the internet is good for. Porn. 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 Really weird porn. Porn. Funny cat videos. Porn. And the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. You know, when you need a little break from all those funny cat videos. Those things can really do a number on your wrist.
Here's an interesting story. You're not going to like this. Be prepared to say, ew. You know it, I know it, your kindergarten niece knows it. It's one of the biggest commandments of the summer. Thou shalt not pee in the pool. And yet, be honest, you've done it, haven't you? Even serious competitive swimmers do it. A fifth of all American swimmers admitted to doing their business in the pool, according to a survey by the water quality. I put an L into water and it came out Walter. This is a survey by the Water Quality and Health Council. Didn't know there was one. Sounds like it's made up. The survey found that most people who use pools didn't realize the diseases that a contaminated pool can carry. It's true. If the simple gross-out factor isn't enough to keep folks from seeking a proper toilet, here's another. Uric acid, U-R-I-C, uric acid, a chemical in your body there, in your urine, can combine with the chlorine in pools to create a nasty bit of chemistry, did you know? Chlorine in pools kills bacteria like E. coli, but that doesn't mean it doesn't form its own irritants. Scientists in the U.S. and China joined forces. Oh, I didn't know they did. That's kind of nice. Scientists in the U.S. and China joined forces to figure out why two compounds, trichloramine and cyanogen chloride, were popping up in pool water. And they traced them back to chemicals whose most likely source was urine. Cyanogen chloride has been used in much larger doses in chemical warfare. And trichloramine can irritate lungs and aggravate the skin. There have been a few cases of people getting really sick from the compound, says Purdue University researcher Ernest Blatchley III. How would you like a name like that? Ernest Blatchley III. Like there were two more in front of him who should have changed their names as well. This guy's from Purdue University. Isn't that where they make those chickens? All right. There are more than 8.5 million private pools in the U.S. and another 309,000 commercial ones, according to a 2013 data survey from the Association of Pool and Spa Professionals. All right, now we've got the Association of Pool and Spa Professionals. That's another group I never heard of. Well, anyway, 8.5 million private pools, 309,000 commercial ones. That's a lot of pools and a lot of potential for mishaps. As summer turns to August and the temperatures climb, many of us will head to the pool for a cool dip. If the water makes your skin itch or your eyes irritated, well, it might be because of something you'd rather not think about, like somebody has peed in the pool. I think we've all peed in the pool at one point or another. Personally, I don't know about you, but I frequently pee in the toilet. How about you, huh? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Me too. Do you ever pee in the woods? By the way, I've brought this show to a brand new level, haven't I? This guy, he's doing a show and he's talking about people peeing in the woods and in the pool. Come on, you got to hear this. This could be my highest listened to show. And I don't know, highest listened to show is probably a stupid phrase, but anyway. Ever pee in the woods? And I guess guys, I don't know. I don't know about women. I'm not a woman, and I don't watch them go to the bathroom anywhere, including the woods. So I don't really know what they do, how they do it, or what they're thinking about when they are doing it. Never came up in conversation. Hi, my name is Ron. What's your name? Susan. Hi, Susan. When you pee, like what happens? What is that like for you? Because I mean, they just, you know, they're like free form, you know, they like wing it, you know, men have fire hoses and, we can put fires out with this thing and we can aim it and, do all kinds of like beer pong games and stuff. But you women just, it's like dumping the bucket, you know, you're just like, whatever, I guess. I don't know. I've never discussed this with you. It never came up in conversation at all. There's been no press conferences about how women pee. And if you're a woman, you know, you don't know what it's like to be a man, to have that little, what am I doing? What is going on here? What is going on? This is supposed to be a professional program. we all do it, man. Let's just be upfront about it, huh? Let's just be upfront about it. But there's something very nature-like, very natural about peeing in the woods for a guy. It's like marking your territory. I think it's a male thing. I think it's a male thing. so you can find your way back if you get lost in the woods. Isn't that your pee over there? Yeah, that must be the way back to the cabin. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but there's something very freeing about that. But anyway, peeing in the pool. I must admit I've done it, but not as an adult. I've never done it as an adult, and it's disgusting. I might have done it as a kid in the neighbor's pool, maybe when I was 5-6 years old, because I couldn't hold it. I didn't know how to. And I may have done it in the pool thinking when I was 5 or 6 years old, what the hell's the difference? This is like the most gigantic toilet bowl in the world. It's like huge. It's like the ocean to me because I'm only 5. The pool is like the size of an ocean. So why not pee in it? I mean, what are the chances of some kid like really swimming in my pee because this is going to all dissolve and there'll be pee no more or Pinot Noir. which is black pea, I think. I think that's a translation. But not the case. Not the case, because as an adult, I think in a different pattern now. And when I see kids in a pool, I swim in big swimming pools at hotels, and there are kids in the pool, and I never think about closing my mouth. I mean, but now I do, and because I realize that stuff doesn't dissipate, really, and the chlorine doesn't eat all of that stuff. And I don't really, yeah, it's just a yuck thing. All right, you know what? I think I'm finished about talking about this now.
You can drive a car, be a movie star.
Now, you know, when we're talking about people urinating in pools, which is the topic of the day, apparently, you know, it's important to realize that there are many topics that people just will not discuss. You don't discuss this kind of thing in public. You don't discuss it in private. And women and men both don't really talk to each other or their doctors or anything about health issues that they have. So we thought it'd be interesting to find out about this and, you know, the stuff that we just won't talk about to anybody, to our spouses, our boyfriends, our girlfriends, our doctors, nothing like little health problems that we kind of ignore. Hi, doctor.
Hi, Ron.
How are you? Dr. Jessica Shepherd joins us. Good. It's good to hear you. Thank you for being my doctor for today.
Absolutely.
Just for today, though. What part of the country are you in?
This morning I'm in D.C.
Okay.
But I'm usually in Chicago, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we're discussing women's health issues, and
yes.
it can even transcend into men's health issues, too, but we'll do this on the women's end. And it's amazing these days, I would think, that patients still are embarrassed about some things. I guess that's the reason. And they don't discuss everything with their doctors.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason that they're really having these issues talking to their doctor mm-hmm. is because, one, socially we're, you know, made to think that those are embarrassing topics.
Yeah.
But sometimes people have changes in their health and they don't really bring it up until we question them because they've adjusted to it or they may not think it's that serious. And it's not really an issue until we bring it up and they're like, oh, I didn't really realize that this might be something that may be affecting my health.
Huh. Okay, and are the issues, when we talk about embarrassing issues, are they because they're in private part areas, perhaps?
I think that's a big reason of why we or women don't want to discuss necessarily an issue. I think in general, as we grow up, we're taught to believe that that's a private area, and so any issue that affects that private area, again, would allude to some type of hesitation to bring that up specifically to your doctor.
Yeah.
We are getting better at that, but I still think we have a lot of a growth to make in that area.
You know, I have a female doctor, and when I was growing up, of course, well, it wasn't the case because it wasn't that integrated at that time when I was growing up back in 1623, apparently. But I'm very open about it. Does that have anything to do with it, perhaps, the fact that we have intramural relationships now with our physicians?
That we have what type of relationships?
Kind of mixed relationships where a male will have a female doctor, female will have a male doctor, etc.
The funny that you bring that up. OBGYN generally in the past was always very male dominated.
Yes.
And so that might be one of the issues that women had bringing up specifically any reproductive area issues. So now we have seen a trend where we have a difference in providers as far as gender, and more females are actually OBGYN. So I think that's why we've started to see a shift in how we bring these topics up. As a little bit more comfort, obviously. Both parties can sometimes relate to the issue that's brought up. And so I think that might have something to do with it. Rather a big thing that, you know, we've seen a change in that area, which is a good thing.
Right. What as a patient can a woman say to their doctor in order to make this situation not a problem?
I think the conversation first should be comfortable. And so I really do encourage my patients to talk to their doctor as if it's someone, you know, sitting with a friend on a couch, someone that they would feel comfortable discussing these sometimes embarrassing topics. So if they don't feel that they have that connection with their doctor, one, I think the first step is to find someone who you can feel confident about talking to that person about those issues. The other thing is to not feel afraid about asking what might be troubling your situation, because what is troubling to you may not be troubling to someone else and someone else, but that's okay. It's finding, you know, that comfort zone and talking about your specific issues. And also, again, the conversation will generate that. Specifically with bleeding, I think that's the number one topic that I see, you know, discussion topic that I have women come into the office for, or changes in their cycle, whether it's very heavy or it's infrequent, and they, you know, are used to having some regularity with their cycle, and now that they're not, that becomes concerning to them.
Yeah, and it's amazing sometimes that when you do bring it up and have a discussion with the doctor, you find that it's very treatable, and the sooner you bring it up, the easier the treatment, because it hasn't gotten complicated at that point. I mean, there are so many benefits to just opening your mouth, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I think when women actually hear the amazing list of options that we can offer them when it comes to bleeding, whether it's with a medication or a procedure or a surgery, they actually are very relieved to know that there are so many options. I think, in the past, surgery was a big part of how we dealt with bleeding issues specifically, and so hysterectomy was always kind of on the list, and women were not always ready to have that type of therapy or treatment. And so now we can offer actually a lot of different procedures that are much less invasive and actually can take up to a day of therapy. And specifically one called the endometrial ablation. And that's actually for women who are finished with childbearing, who notice some irregularities in their cycle, specifically with the flow or the frequency at which they're having their cycles. And you can get it done in the office or in the operating room and go home the same day. And recovery can be maybe 2 to 3 days, as opposed to a hysterectomy, which is a much larger procedure, and recovery can last anywhere to 5 weeks, 5 to 8 weeks, rather, depending on how it's done.
Okay, so there are some amazing technologies that people might even be aware of.
Right.
Dr.
So when you think about, you know, I think a lot of women think they have their mothers or grandmothers or aunts that went through a hysterectomy in this long 8-week recovery time, and now when they think that they could have something that they can go home in a day and, you know, be back to work or taking care of their family in the next 3 to 5 days, completely different. And so when they hear that option, they actually are very open to hearing more about it and actually getting the procedure done.
My mother never talked about her medical conditions to her family nor her husband, and I'm assuming nor to her doctors. I think that was, but times are changing where we do discuss things more so than a prior generation, as far as I could have seen.
Say that again, that last part?
Well, as far as I can see, this generation is a lot more open about discussion than prior generations.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think, and anything discussing any topic, you know, much more talkative. I think we're more open with our bodies and feeling comfortable with ourselves. So when these moments come up with our health specifically, I think that the generation that we see today, the millennials, and that they'll be willing to talk about these changes and what they can do about it. And so the good thing is that we, you know, in science and technology has somewhat caught up to that, know, that change in generations, that we have more options to offer them. So the conversation actually becomes much more robust when we're able to offer so many options, because they have much more questions. Yeah. So it actually, you know, it works out rather well.
Yeah, I know we're running short of time, but I did want to ask you something here. When people have a question about their bodies, especially something that they don't discuss among other people, they go to the internet before they call their doctors or their gynecologists. That seems to be their doctor now becomes a computer before they even have a conversation with you.
I call that person Dr. Google.
Does that concern you?
It is concerning because there's a lot of misinformation on the internet, obviously. But I think even with, you know, people being informed and looking to the internet, I think the issue becomes if they don't see their doctor even after getting, you know, whatever information generates through the internet. I do have a lot of patients who come into the office and have gone to the internet, but the things that they've now tell me what they found, and then we can kind of sort through in a discussion about what may be good information, what may be bad information, and then we'll be able to pare down for them specifically what we think would be best options for them. So I think the issue comes with what do you do with the information when you find it on the internet, and the best answer would be to still go to your doctor and obviously discuss what you found.
Not everything on the internet is accurate, and I say that to the public, and I say it to Donald Trump. Doctor.
I think I say it about 18 times a day.
Probably. How do we get more information about this?
Yeah, for endometrial ablation, which I think is a revolutionary procedure that's done for women for their bleeding, to go to www.novasure.com, that's N-O-V-A-S-U-R-E, so they can find out about endometrial ablation. Possibly it might be the choice for them, but if it is for them and they do get it, they'll be very, very pleased with the procedure.
Excellent. There are answers to questions, so ask them. That's the bottom line. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Shepherd. Pleasure of speaking to you today.
You as well. Have a great one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructosey that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts! I want Piggy Parts!
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved piggy part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original barbecue or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts.
Good eating. Good eating. All right, fine. Hey, kids. Kids are out of school. I've said this before on the radio. I don't believe you should have kids unless you can financially take care of these kids, give them a good life. Otherwise, you shouldn't be having kids. And too many people in this country, and certainly other countries, just have kids because they can. And it's a horrible, horrible. It's irresponsibility is what it is. I mean, in a major way. You can't arrest people for having kids, but so many people shouldn't be having them. because it just can't give them any kind of life. I mean, they bring kids into poverty and starvation and horrible, horrible situations. But not everybody thinks twice, and not everybody plans for things, and religious people just, you know, fuck away, I suppose is the best way of putting it. Is that the best way of putting it? Probably not. And too often schools are responsible for taking care of kids and parents not. So with the summer upon us, who takes care of the kids? I mean, if the schools are the babysitters and they give the kids meals and stuff like that, if it's, that's all the responsibility of the schools now, what do you do during the summer when there aren't schools? I was curious. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning. Nick Cox. Hey, Ron, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Audrey, you there as well?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning to the both of you. Audrey Rowe is USDA Administrator, Food and Nutrition Services. Steve Cox is Corporate Spokesperson for Duxo Incorporated. Welcome to the program. We're talking about kids, and we know that there are school programs that feed the children during the school year, and I guess we're trying to figure out what happens when the school year is over.
Well, it's a significant gap between the number of meals that children, a number of children who participate in the school meals programs during the school year, and the number that have school summer programs available also so they can receive a breakfast or a lunch during the summer months. And we also know how important it is because for many children, the continuation of learning as well as making sure that they're being physically active and engaged in regular programs, various programming, is very important. But the gap is 22 million during the school year. We're at 3.8 million during the summer.
Yeah. And is this basically due to, let's face it, kids coming from poor environments where they can't be fed, or is it that parents aren't taking care of their children? What causes this dependency on the school system?
Well, you know, for many parents, particularly parents who are low income and those who participate in programs like SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, and others, the resources that they have available to them are very, very tight, and the ability to manage providing food every day for their families and meeting all of the other responsibilities is a real struggle. And so when you have 17.4 million families or households in the U.S. who are food insecure, that means that on any given day, a family may have to skip a meal, or a parent skips a meal, a child has a meal. Yeah. The schools during the school year are able to provide a breakfast and a lunch. Yeah. And in some schools and after-school programs, they provide a summer. So it's really a question of resources that families have available to meet their needs. And during the summer, one of the things that we have found is that access is a real challenge for many families. Schools are not always open during the summer for summer programming. Yeah. When this program was initiated, it was anticipated in 1968 that the schools would be the basis on which we would offer summer meals. Well, we know that many schools just are not open during the summer, or they have enrichment programs, and they limit who can participate in the school's enrichment program. So as a result, many children don't have access, and part of our focus has been to expand access and increase the programming available to families so that children can have at least a breakfast and or a lunch.
Okay. Now, Steve, how does your company get involved in this?
So, Ron, Sodexo is a global Fortune 500 firm. We're the 19th largest employer in the world. We're an outsourcing firm, so we're in the facilities management and in food service operations business. So we provide food service operations to about 500 school districts all across the United States, serve about 2 million meals a day during the school year. But we're also heavily engaged with organizations like the USDA and other partners to help fill that that summer meals gap. And Ron, just to put this in perspective for the Boston area, you know, Audrey mentioned that you end up with about 20% of students, children across the United States being food insecure. In the Boston area, it's about 15%. Mm. And that means that today, literally today, about 15% of the kids in Boston are going to get up and they're not going to have any idea whether they're going to eat today or not. So that's why it's important from a Sodexo perspective that we help fill that gap.
Okay. Why is it the school systems, why is it that they participate as opposed to community organizations setting up shops like Meals on Wheels, that kind of thing? Why does it fall into the school system's hands?
Well, the school system is, in a community, as you know, is right. A central place where children can come and not only have a meal, but also participate in learning activities. Mm-hmm. There are a number of Boys and Girls Clubs and libraries and museums and hospitals and clinics, all who offer summer meals, offer meals during the summer. So it's not just relying on the school, religious institutions. Right. So it's not a reliance on the school.
Exactly.
It is a total community.
Yeah. And then companies, private companies also get involved, as Sodexo is doing, in sponsoring that as well.
Absolutely. And they are a critical partner.
Yeah.
Our partnership from USDA is with the private sector, nonprofit sector, and as I said, the faith-based community,
mm-hmm.
to try and build a strong network so that children have access to food during the summer, but also can have access to learning activities, physical activities. They're not just at home on their PlayStations, but they're actually out learning and having an active summer.
Okay.
And Ron, if I could just add on to that, I would offer to you that the issue of childhood hunger is not an unsolvable issue. It can be solved. In fact, I would offer to you that it can be solved through, just as Audrey was articulating, public-private partnerships.
Yeah.
That can be done in any city across America. And frankly, the issue of childhood hunger could literally be solved in 1 year if we get businesses activated in terms of public-private partnerships. It can be done. It's not an intractable problem.
Yeah. Don't we support that through food stamps and welfare programs, that very inability to provide food for families?
Well, the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is formerly the food stamp program, does provide a financial benefit to a family for the purchase of food. But
right.
if you think of a family of four, the average benefit level that they would receive would be about $480 a month.
Yeah.
For many families, they're able to manage pretty much during the first part of the month on that kind of a budget.
Yeah.
But toward the end of the month, you start finding families having to stretch the remaining dollars until their next
sure.
benefit level
sure.
is received. So it's a matter of, and I think Steve is right, it's a matter of having a community infrastructure
mm-hmm.
and a political will to address the issue of food insecurity among households. I mean, as we said, you know, in the United States of America, we have about 17.4, at least in 2014, the
yeah.
statistics indicated, we had about 17.4 million households who were food insecure.
And yet we help people in other countries with their problem as we do here, but it seems like what we do here is fall short of our own people. But here is an example where we are doing something in order to help our own. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for your
Absolutely.
Time. Go on. No, go on.
No, I was just going to say that since 2009, we have increased the number of meals provided to children by about 27 million.
Wow.
So we are continuing as a country to try and address this problem, but it is a public-private partnership
right.
in the end that will be able to resolve it.
That makes all the sense in the world, and thank you to the both of you accordingly. Where can we get more information?
Well, if you are a parent and you're looking for a place where your child, you can use our National Hunger Hotline, which is 866-3-HUNGRY, or you can text the word food to 877-877 and find where summer meal program may be available in your neighborhood.
Perfect.
And Ron, let me just offer this to learn more about the hunger issues, and then specifically how businesses can get engaged. Like we were talking in terms of public-private partnerships,
yes.
You can go to SodexoInsights.com. That's S-O-D-X-O, SodexoInsights.com. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Take care, Ron.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Nice people. I like them. They're nice people. It's just a shame that the schools take the responsibility as parents. I don't know. What are you going to do? I'm not going to do anything, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, I have informed you. I have entertained you. I don't know what else you want from me. But I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Contact me if you wish, to no avail as far as you're concerned. RonVanDamShow@gmail.com. RonVanDamShow@gmail.com. Thank you so much. I bid you a fond farewell. Bye.